The following is a paid program.
It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Hey, everybody. Happy Thursday. Welcome into our show. We are served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington and going to touch a variety of bases today on the show. A little later, we'll hear from Coach Steve Ortmeier, who joined us for the Monday morning quarterback shows throughout the football season. We'll put a little wrap up on football and also look ahead to the draft with Coach Ort, because we know Josh Allen, where he's going to be. He's going to hear his name called early. I think it's an interesting discussion about how some of the other guys fall out. Who will be the second Wildcat picked? I think that's a kind of a interesting discussion. So we'll have that with Coach Ortmeier, Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated, and of course we'll lead it off with Mike Pratt here in just a bit. Talk Kentucky Hoops. Our guest lineup's always presented by Sleep Outfitters. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Had an upset in the SEC last night. Auburn losing at Mississippi, 82-67. Ole Miss has won 9 in a row. Was just looking at their profile, and they started off 2-0 in the league. Beat Vanderbilt last Saturday by 10, beat Auburn by 15 yesterday in Oxford. And I guess there's nothing... you shouldn't underestimate the power of momentum, because Ole Miss hadn't really beaten anybody of consequence in this winning streak until last night. They started with San Diego, which was 100 in the KenPom rankings, and the first 7 games in the win streak, that was the highest-ranked team they beat. And Vanderbilt a little higher, and then Auburn in the top 20 in the KenPom. So a very nice win. They did have a win over Baylor earlier this year, so... Ole Miss, maybe a team to watch. We'll see. They're getting ready to go down and play at Mississippi State this Saturday, and that'll be an interesting matchup given how Ole Miss is playing and that State is playing so well this year. Kentucky's next opponent, Vandy, got thumped at Georgia last night, 82-63. We'll get more into the matchup with the Commodores tomorrow, but they have started off 0-2 in the league. Florida wins at Arkansas, 57-51. And then a couple of top 25 teams were upset. Kind of gets crazy when you get into conference play. These kind of results happen that seem unlikely, but you go on the road in league play, and it happens. Rutgers beat Ohio State 64-61, and Houston suffered its first loss. Temple got them 73-69. A Kentucky football note, Georgia is looking for a new offensive coordinator. Tennessee hired Jim Chaney away from the Dogs. One of the names that's come up, according to I think John Hale cited some sources he had that showed up at a couple of other media outlets, Eddie Grand's name is under consideration. Now, they have a co-offensive coordinator, James Coley, down there at Georgia, who could end up getting the call. He's already on staff, obviously. But if they go looking elsewhere, Eddie Grand's name is popping up. And I know Eddie got on the wrong side of some of the Kentucky fans over the last couple of seasons because the offense wasn't explosive enough or high-powered enough. But he's very well-respected. And you look at the fact that in the last 3 years, he's been the offensive coordinator for a team that's won 24 games and or co-offensive coordinator with Coach Henshaw. And they've done it with a first-year quarterback this year and then 2 years ago with a quarterback that was they didn't expect to go with, a junior college transfer who was thrown into the mix in game 3, and then it was hurt for a lot of the second year. So you've had 4,000-yard rushers in 3 seasons, and they've done this without, after the first year, a receiver that made a big splash as far as getting the ball down the field, taking the top off the defense. Lynn Bowden had big numbers, but Lynn obviously did most of his work inside of 10 to 15 yards and then yards after the catch. Jeff Badette that first year, and I think you go back and look at what Kentucky would like to look like, and with even I think you look at that first year of this run in 2016 when they had Bidette catching deep balls and then had 2,000-yard rushers. That's how they'd like to look moving forward. I think you ideally, if you had a guy like Bidette that could take the top off the defense, a guy like Bowden that's working underneath, and then a great running back or a stable of them as Kentucky could have this season, and that's what they would like to look at. So I think it's interesting Eddie's name and has popped up. Hopefully Kentucky can hang on to him. Women's basketball, number 16, Kentucky's at number 13, Tennessee tonight, 7 Eastern time. Kentucky's not won in Knoxville since 2014, but Tennessee did just lose at home to Missouri. And interesting angle of this is Ryan Howard, the fabulous freshman for Kentucky. She's from Cleveland, Tennessee, really wasn't recruited by Tennessee. So she goes back to her home state now, and sometimes players struggle in this kind of situation. Other times they go all Chris Lofton, like that 31-point game he had in Rupp Arena. So hopefully it's the latter for Ryan tonight when she leads Kentucky back into Knoxville. And let's see, a couple of national recruiting analysts are picking Isaiah Stewart to Washington now. He's been mentioned with Kentucky off and on throughout his recruitment process. And Nerlens Noel, released from the hospital, has been diagnosed as a concussion. Looked like it could have been worse, so he'll be in the concussion protocol at the NBA for the time being. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Mike Pratt's in the on-deck circle when we come right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
16 after the top of the hour as we roll on with the Thursday edition of the Leach Report. To the Kentucky branded hotline we go to bring on Mike Pratt. His weekly visits to our show presented by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. Check them out at boonesbutchershop.com. Mike, Kentucky got that first conference win against A&M on Tuesday night. A little rough at times. What was the good, the bad, and the ugly, if you will, for you?
Hey, Tom, you're going to have the dude call me. I got some bleed in here.
Oh, okay. We'll have him reconnect with you.
Call me right back.
All right. We'll get Mike Pratt reconnected here as the Wildcats are back at home on Saturday to take on Vanderbilt. It's a stretch that Kentucky really needs to maximize, I think, because three of the next five are at home. Now, one of those is with Kansas, but if you can take care of business in your home games, that's going to be Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and Kansas. Then you go to Georgia. Kentucky obviously would be a favorite there. It's going to be tough to win at Auburn. And then you'll have at Vanderbilt to close out the month. So if you could get out of that stretch and say only have one loss in that stretch of six games would be where Kentucky, I think, needs to be looking long-term as far as projections for the league race and seeding, et cetera. Mike Pratt's back on the line with us. So, Mike, what did you like? What did you have questions about coming out of the A&M game?
Well, I didn't like the slow start. I don't think anybody liked that, starting with John Calipari. Don't know what it's going to take to get these guys to focus and understand now we're in primetime. We are in the first primetime of the year. The second primetime would be the NCAA, but you've got to go through this one to get to that one. And slow starts will kill you, particularly on the road. I mean, you just can't bury yourself early. Kentucky's down 12-2, and next thing you know, they come back. I think it was 17-16, Tom, if I remember. I don't have my stat sheet in front of me right now, but that concerns me. The other thing is, and we talked about it when we had Dan on, we talked about feeding the post and how you go about that. And the angles and where they're throwing the ball, the big guys. And also, I think sometimes the big guys get a little lazy. We've watched Kenny Payne work with them daily. And you've got to spread out, and then you've got to dance in there. You have to move your feet to keep the defender from reaching over or reaching around. If you just sit down and stand there, they're going to come around you, okay? But you've got to dance with them. It's just a split second or two is all it takes to help the passer with a little better angle. So it's a two-way street.
I saw Kyle Tucker had a story in The Athletic that just posted earlier today where he talked to some college basketball writers and analysts about Kentucky, and you were one of them. And the point that you hit on in this story was about Kentucky needing to find an offensive identity. And I guess that can happen sometimes. They've got a lot of players that are very good, very comparable, but there's nobody yet that has separated from the crowd to a great degree individually. And so they're still trying to find out what they do best, right?
Together, exactly. What they do best together. Are they an inside-out? Do they need the ball to go in to establish the offense and then come out first? Or do they play from the outside in, and that's how they get it going? And, one of my favorite sayings, you've heard me beat this drum, three carries two, but two can't carry three. And they need to find three guys they can count on to make plays. I mean, if you got five, beautiful, okay? But you need at least three guys that can consistently do what they do best, not try to create something that they either aren't asked to do or can't do, but they've got to do what they do best to pull this team along. And I think Dontaa Hall at Alabama is a great example. What did he do? He ran the floor and got putbacks. They put the ball in his hands low a couple times, but, they're not running that offense through him. He's just working his buns off. And, I think everybody has a role. I don't think this team totally understands their role collectively. They kind of understand what they're supposed to do, but now you got to pull it together for the team.
I think the guy that maybe has the best handle on his role and has gotten there in the last few weeks, if you agree, is Higgins.
I do agree. I do agree, and we've talked, and, I had him on postgame. I don't know if you were there or not. Last time I had him out, I told him, and we were on air. I said, look, this shot's going to be fine. You just straighten that shot out, and everything is going to be sweet for you. Don't worry about it. He had a big grin on his face. He came back again. I said, now, who told you that shot was going to start to fall? He just grinned. He said, you did. And I think the kid just needed a little encouragement. Calipari's been good. I mean, Calipari says, hey, you got to shoot it, shoot it. And some coaches might give him the quick hook, the Sparky Anderson, after a couple misses. But Cal's been very consistent with him. We've seen his play really blossom. And I think quickly, his play now, particularly at the offensive end, he's really starting to feel confident, it looks like. And defensively, he's in some passing lanes, doing some of those things. So, but I go back to really E.J. Montgomery and Nick Richards. They've got to grow their game in what is asked of them. And I'm not hitting on anybody or throwing anybody under the bus. I just think those guys are really talented guys who are still trying to feel their way along. The quicker they decide and feel good about their role and execute it, the better this team will be.
Yeah, we think back to that Alabama game when they're attacking off the bounce. You need to be able to put Nick or EJ into the game and count on them to stop that from happening when you run into
a given
matchup. Absolutely,
a rim goalie. And then the other thing is they've got to take the Dontaa Hall attitude, okay? Although EJ, he's got a nice little jumper, okay, but I'm not so sure that's exactly what his role is. But if he gets after the boards and gets some putbacks, gets to the charity stripe, that helps everybody's confidence. And we know Nick can make his foul shots more involved along the lines of Hall. Just putbacks, run the floor, guard the basket, okay? Be the rim goalie. I mean, this team's going to get better dramatically if that happens consistently.
Tom and Mike Pratt, we'll get to a break. We'll come right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. You can find them in Hamburg and in the Palomar Center. And it is Kentucky-owned and operated. Everything on the menu is made from scratch at Wild Eggs. Time today for breakfast, brunch, or lunch. We'll be right back.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Mike Pratt with us on the Kentucky Brandon Hotline, talking a little Kentucky basketball as far as Kentucky and finding their identity offensively. I think back to that Kansas State game, and I know PJ had the free throw line struggles, which to his credit, he's shot them really well this year. But forget that. Just think about how strong he was in that game. And he's really good at facing up and, you know, gets that ball in the post and somewhere inside the high post and facing up and attacking guys. The Texas A&M coach the other night said there was a stretch there where they just didn't have anybody that could handle PJ. He seems to be, when he's playing like that, maybe is he the hardest guy to guard on this Kentucky team?
I would say that if he's not one, he's 1A. I would like to see him work the paint, block to block, flash into the middle of the paint, turn, catch a ball, go to the rim. He's clever. He can use both hands. Okay. Now he feels very confident going to the foul line, as you said, shooting it better. So he can, if you watch that Auburn-Mississippi game last night, Auburn took half of their shots beyond the arc with the trays. Mississippi took a fair amount too. But there wasn't a real inside presence on either team. Okay. I mean, a dominant. This young fella, PJ Washington, can be a dominant guy, and you could have him and Reed flashing in and out of the paint there and going to work, and then pretty soon that pulls the defense down because, as the A&M coach said, hey, we didn't have anybody. He's just so strong in there. Not that he can't shoot it outside, he won't have some shots, but, boy, he could be a real factor, I mean a serious factor, in the paint, around the paint, whatever you want to call it, short corner, that's where he can really help Kentucky.
I think we've talked about this before, the things that Kentucky needs, and you mention it all the time with guys like Nick and EJ, they have, it's there now. It's a matter of getting the production game in and game out. As a coach, it's I'm sure, most distressing when you need something and you look at your team and you don't see where you can get it. Cal can look at his team and see where he can get pretty much everything he needs. It's just a matter of getting it from them game in and game out, right?
Consistency. You know, they're all capable of doing things with the basketball. Some do some things differently and better, but are they willing night after night? It's not a slam on them, but, I mean, mentally, are they focused? Are they willing mentally and physically to do it every night and take what it do what it takes to win at this level? That's something that sometimes with young guys, they don't understand. It's a little slower to grow into their mind, and that's why many of Cal's teams really jump off the page at you in February. It kind of sinks in. So, I mean, they're all capable. They're all capable. He's not asking, I don't think, anything of any of the players that they can't do. It's just a matter of whether they're focused and ready mentally to accept that. And we'll see as they grow. We'll see as the season moves along.
Mike Pratt, always a pleasure. We'll see you on Saturday at RUP.
Gotcha, buddy.
This is Mike Pratt. He joins us every Thursday, courtesy of Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. We're halfway home on this edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. When we come back, it's Justin Rowland, Cats Illustrated, and Coach Steve Ortmeier later as well.
On Talk Radio 1080, tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Second half of our show for Thursday. Justin Rowland with us on the Kentucky Brandon Hotline from catsillustrated.com and at Rowland Rivals on Twitter. And they at Rivals have a partnership with some of the entities that do in-depth statistical analysis in football and basketball. And you've just done a couple of posts today, Justin, about some of the numbers that came back from Kentucky's win over Texas A&M. What were the biggest contrasts to that performance and the one at Alabama on Saturday?
Yeah, you know, against Alabama, I think at times they settled for some shots that they shouldn't have taken when they were maybe frustrated and things weren't working, but they also missed a lot of shots that they should have made. I think they shot 47% in the paint, and that was pretty low for anybody and for this team. Against Texas A&M, a pretty physical team, they were 74% in the paint. So they finished strong, and that was the guards as well as the big men in the second half. And then in transition, they were pretty much flawless. They had like an adjusted field goal rate of like 95% in transition. So they capitalized on their scoring opportunities on baskets they should have made. So they didn't shoot themselves in the foot.
What's Kentucky going to look like in 2 months when the SEC tournament's getting ready to start and we roll into a phase three of the postseason of this season? What will be the biggest changes, do you think, or what needs to change the most?
Well, I mean, I think they got Hagans on track. I think Hero's pretty much on track, and those were two of the things they really needed. I thought the other variable earlier in the season was how consistent is P.J. Washington going to be? And I had kind of gotten to a place where his scoring has been down for a little while, where I felt like his overall game was maturing and evolving, and he was becoming a more impactful player, even if he wasn't scoring a whole lot. I thought in the first half against Texas A&M, there was a little bit of regression to maybe disappearing a little bit. He did better in the second half, but he's got to play a consistently high level, obviously, and I still point to E.J. Montgomery and maybe Nick Richards as guys that Calgary really, for this team to take it to the next level, he really wants them to become impactful.
Just talking with Mike Pratt about this, if you're the guy on the other team, the coach of the other team, I think you look at Kentucky, and for most teams, probably the toughest matchup, I would think, hardest guy to guard is P.J. because he can score with his back to the basket with either hand. He's got good post moves. He's really good when he catches it in 15 feet and in and facing up and using his quickness against post players. And he's shown he can go out and hit a perimeter shot, and he can make free throws now if you foul him.
That's right, yeah. So when he's clicking, that makes a huge difference. Like probably the single biggest difference that any player on the team makes is when P.J. is playing great, Kentucky looks really good. I will say against A&M, they're struggling this year, but they're really tough. And I think going into the game, they had like the number 4 post-defense efficiency in the country. And so that's impressive. Kentucky finished so much around the rim, but they were really denying entry passes and doing some good things defensively, even though Kentucky was getting their points. And I think it was a tough matchup for him. But I think he's played fairly well this year.
Yeah, the line you just said about the correlation between P.J. playing well, Kentucky playing well, something Kenny Payne talked at length about in one of the press sessions a few weeks ago. He seems to be – I mean, you've got Hagans now locked in, it looks like, at the point. Quickly is being a nice compliment to him and can play off the ball too. Hero's making shots. Keldon's been a little off lately, but I think he'll be fine. It's Reed Travis is who he is. PJ's the guy that it seems like is the one individual, along with probably some combination of Richards and Montgomery. Those two things are what could really elevate Kentucky by March.
Yeah, and I know I have a tendency to kind of, once an issue gets fixed, it's like, okay, well, what else is wrong? But, like, I have to say, the backcourt is playing better than I thought they were going to play this season. Like, Hagans has set a new career scoring high in each of the last 3 games. He's 5 assists per game over the last 4, 19 steals over the last 4. Like, he's fixed. And Emmanuel Quickly seemed to be lost, and now he's found. Like, he has embraced his niche, lowest minute total of the season, but he was perfect from the field, 3 steals, and then Hero's got, I mean, the backcourt, if they keep playing like this, you need a great college basketball. It's better than I thought it was going to be.
Kentucky's had, I was looking at these numbers yesterday, 4 guys, I think, that averaged 2 steals per game in a season. Rondo's got the best average in a season. Wayne Turner's on the list. I think second was a tie between Cliff Hawkins and Rod Rhodes. And Wayne Turner, I think if you round up, is like a .1.99 or something. You could round up and get to 2, so maybe it's 5 guys. Kyle Macy was actually on the list, too, in his junior season. But Hagans, if he can stay at this pace, will blow them all away.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's just on another level. I was thinking the other day, like, is he like the most singularly impactful defensive player that Kentucky has had since Anthony Davis? And, I mean, that's
in a different way, yeah.
I don't really think about it. But, I mean, it's fair to ask the question. I will say, defensively, Jamal Baker looked better than I thought he was going to look. I mean, his lateral quickness was there. He knows what's going on all over the court on both ends, and I thought it was very encouraging that he played as well as he did defensively.
Now, I had somebody close to the program a couple weeks ago tell me they think Baker could be their second or third best perimeter defender. Now, there's going to be a big drop-off from one to two when you've got Hagans, but he's one of the second or third best perimeter defender right now, and that's a big step up from what they were getting from Kwade.
Yeah, I was very impressed with him. I mean, there was one play when Kentucky had kind of like a secondary break, and Baker had the ball on one wing, and you think he's waited so long, he wants to be a gunner. But, I mean, he watched Hero come around well in advance on this curl on the other wing and just set him up perfectly for a shot in stride that he nailed. I mean, that said a lot. Like, he's a mature player with some moxie. And he's going to be a player. I mean, if he stays until his junior season, that's the kind of championship foundation piece that I think you need.
Yeah. Maybe he becomes what Charles Matthews would have had he stayed.
Right. Yeah. They got to get some of that.
Some of that veteran component and can obviously really shoot it. But I think people thought that was all that there was to his game, and looks like there's more. Shift to football a little bit. I think you were on last week, but I was not here to chat just a little bit about the wrap up to the football season. What were some of the most, I guess, impressive aspects of what Kentucky did this season to outperform expectations to the level that it did?
Well, I think the most significant development was Josh Allen going from like a really good player to probably, the best defensive player in college football, because I think it's tough to quantify the impact that had on the rest of the defense. Like, obviously the secondary improved. How much of the improvement was because one guy was just impossible to block? And, that sets a lot of other good things up as well. But, I mean, shouldn't overshadow the fact that Cash Daniel turned out to be a pretty good player. And DeAndre Square and Chris Oates did not play like freshman linebackers. Like, Square played like 50-plus snaps against Penn State in the Citrus Bowl and really held his own. And the guys in the secondary, Arius West became a more well-rounded player, better in coverage. Derek Beatty had his best season as a Kentucky Wildcat. I mean, there had been a question that some people were asking, how much are players developing? I don't think there's any question guys developed a lot from last year this year.
What about the Eddie Grand Georgia rumors that have surfaced? Looks like there are various reports that they're interested in him.
Either make some people's heads blow up, or I don't know. Just I think his goal at Kentucky has not been to like race up and down the field and rack up a bunch of yards between the 20s, and that. And he's really tailored an offense to the strengths of his personnel. Taking weaknesses into consideration. And I get that people weren't thrilled with the offense this season, but Kirby Smart knows what he's doing. And it makes sense that a place like Georgia, as opposed to maybe another kind of program, would be interested, because they've always wanted and had that physical identity. And it sounds like he's probably going to be on the short list.
Justin, appreciate the time as always.
Thanks a lot.
Justin Roland, CatsIllustrated.com, and his weekly visits to the show are presented by Shuffle Bean Coffee. We go to a break. Coach Ortmeier next up when we return here on the Leach Report Radio Network.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at TomLeachKY.
13 away from the top of the hour, back to the Kentucky Branded Hotline. We bring on Coach Steve Ortmeier to talk a little Kentucky football, and we'll start with a wrap-up to the season. Coach, what was impressed you most about Kentucky's performance in the Citrus Bowl win over Penn State?
Well, the thing that impressed me, Tom, is the continuing things throughout this season that we talked about on the very first weekend of the season, and that is the leadership that is exerted within the framework of this team, the leadership that comes from the players on the field. I thought it was I thought it was extremely good all the way from the first quarter to the to when Benny set the record. And then we kind of got off the rails a little bit and finally got it back at the end to come away with a nice win. I mean, it was that's a good win for Kentucky football and Kentucky history.
You know, you guys back in 06, 07 had a really strong core of leaders, too, with guys like Wesley Woodyard and Keenan Burton and Jacob Tammy and Andre Woodson and that crew, and were able to transition into losing them and not fall off the face of the map. And you ended up three consecutive bowl games that Kentucky followed with. So is it something that is passed on and from one group of leaders to a new one?
I think in many instances it is. And I think that that Josh particularly has anticipated this and is trying to give some of it to that defensive staff. We're really going to need it next year. That's where the big drop-off on this team is going to occur, as much as anything, not with the talent on the field, but with the leadership on the field and in the leadership in the off season. But I think that they are working very hard at passing it on. Those guys will still be around here a little bit this spring, and these guys will be back for most of these guys will be back for pro day, and they can help get things going right there. But that's the thing that's going to be tough. We're going to have to find a way to do that. But this is also the time for Terry Wilson to step up and become that next guy.
Let's talk a little bit about looking ahead to the draft. Pro Day will be the next big event for these guys, and then the NFL Combine for the guys like Josh and others that will go there is the last week of February into first weekend in March. For Josh, we'll start with him. I've seen him projected as high as number two in a recent projection. What will the NFL folks be looking at for him that they didn't see on tape?
I don't know much more that they can look at. They're gonna look at all the measurables now. They'll look at the height, weight, speed, and drills. The combine drills will be an indication of what his physical quickness is and what his physical quickness relative to his strength is. That's the last remaining thing you can do for Josh Allen. I mean, everything else is there. Everything is there. And like I say, it wouldn't surprise me wherever he went in this draft, because I think particularly after watching Quentin Williams in the championship game, Josh is the best defensive player in the country this year.
Talk to me about Benny Snell and how this process plays out for him, and where do you think he what range will he be in for the NFL?
Benny's most important work has been done. Benny's most important work has been done on the film that people has on him. The measurables on him is a little bit different story from Josh Allen. They're not going to be what Josh Allen's was. What you're trying to do with Benny Snell is measure his heart, measure his attitude, measure his leadership. Because the measurables that you want to see on the field are there on film. They're not going to show up in the combine. This is not a guy that's going to wow you in the combine. He's going to do things well. He's going to do things that will give people the impression that he's a legitimate guy, but he's not going to jump off the page on you at the combine like Josh probably will.
Yeah, Benny, when he first got here, wasn't instantly a starter, so he was on every special team, and you saw him on Bowden's run the other day, one of the runs after the catch that Bowden had. Benny was down there as leading the way, so he's been a willing participant as a blocker. All of that should serve him well, right?
Very well, very well. The details on Benny are going to be the things that are going to jump out at you. The details like picking up blitzes, like getting a block on a return, those kind of things. There's going to be one or two or three teams that are going to hit on that, and he's going to jump up and say, this is a guy that is a real winner and a guy that we need in this program. That's what will stand out about Benny.
we know where Josh is going to be. It seems to me that I don't have a clear – I wouldn't know who to guess right now would be the second player, for instance, picked for Kentucky, because there are a lot of guys that I could see, depending on how this plays out, somewhere in the third, fourth, fifth round, and that's Benny, that's Bunchy Stallings, that's all the guys in the secondary, probably others that I'm missing here. Anybody that you think will separate from the pack as they go through this process of evaluation?
I don't know. I think the two that are very, very close after Josh, and I don't know where they're going to be. They look kind of like third-round guys to me, and that's Bunchy and Benny. Bunchy's liable to go before Benny. He had an outstanding year also. He's been a very consistent player, and that's one of the things that's – one of the things that you really look for when you're drafting in the NFL, or when you're drafting linemen, is do you show up? Do you show up every week? Do you miss times because of injury, or are you lined up every week and play every week? That's very important to an offensive lineman, and he did this year.
What about the guys in the secondary? Five of them that could end up on NFL teams.
Yeah, there's going to be some measurables that will strong on particularly on the two corners, on Beatty and Westry, because of their size. They are going to be attracted by some teams because the NFL is a size game, and you have to match your corners with those receivers. You saw this was one of the weaknesses that Alabama had against Clemson the other day, that they couldn't match on the corner against Clemson's size. And that's always a factor in the NFL. So those two guys are going to be very attractive. But the two really good players, in my opinion, in the secondary are Darius West and Mike Edwards. And I think they both have not only good chances to get drafted reasonably. I'm guessing maybe those guys are fifth round, sixth round guys. But they have a better chance than their draft position to make a team because those guys, they did it here, and they will continue to do it in the NFL.
Coach, appreciate the time as always. We'll catch up again after some of this process plays itself out. Thank you.
You bet, Tom. Thanks.
Coach Steve Ortmeier, we'll take a break and come back to wrap up this edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Been on a slice of Wildcat history. This day, 1966, Rupps Runts won at Georgia, but it was a struggle. Two overtimes, 69-65. Louis Dampier had 23. They had no games closer than 10 points previous to that night down in Athens, where Kentucky will go next Tuesday. Congrats to Ben Roberts and his wife. They welcomed a new baby to their family this week. I saw that on Twitter, so happy for Ben. So I don't think we'll call him to be on the show in the next day or two, but hopefully they'll get a little sleep and enjoy the new edition. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. Mike DeCourcy will join us. Joe Fisher from the Vandy Network. We'll see you then on the Leach Report.
Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on the Leach Report Radio Network.